In the studio, I've got John Lawson. Morning, John.
Kia ora, good morning.
John's literally just walked in the studio and sat down. We've put it right on the air right away. John, I did find the candidate booklet for the Well Energy Trust election, but I know that you and I have both agreed that, having read that, that we're still not very well informed, as we were when all we had was the kind of teams that they were part of. Like this one here, Jenny Abel, I joined the Yester Discounts Invest in Community team to support Waikato businesses and households by continuing to provide discounts while also investing it. So that's repeating it. And
you can't talk about discounts too often, according to descriptions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that there's no discussion about what the discounts and the grants, what's actually going on there. And the last election, it was very obvious to everyone that the team that won because they said, bring back discounts.
Yep. I think they ought
to. And people thought, I like the sound of discounts.
Yep.
They
should go one better and have sale on there.
So, yeah. Well, they've gone one better and called themselves brought back discounts. The thing that I know, working in an organisation that receives funding from Well Energy Trust, and so obviously that makes us biased, but also there's some insight to be had, and I know lots of community groups do, is that you get a lot of bang for your buck with grants. You get some awesome stuff, some essential stuff done in the community. I don't know who else they fund for. You can actually look it up on their website if you really want to and see what's been done. And I think this work is important. I think it needs to continue. But most people don't have the level of understanding I do because they're not in the situation I am.
But even you don't understand who's going to administer it the best.
Well, no, we can't tell from what they've said. So, because everyone knows now if they say that they're not into discounts, they'll get voted out. And I do get, right, people will say, well, people on low income, the discounts makes a difference in their lives. And that is true. But it always seems to be right-wing people pushing this line, which is kind of interesting, historically.
It's been adopted by the left as well now. So yeah.
Well, it's obvious everyone has to adopt it. But, okay, discounts for people who really are in need sounds like a good idea, but discounting the other, 80% of the population seems it's possibly, by implication, is not so necessary as much as we all enjoy a discount. So I'm just trying to talk about it. I'm aware that...
And remind people that we've got another 13 days to go to get our votes in.
Yeah.
If you can make sense of them.
Yeah, there was... So I would think if you like what they're doing, you vote the brought back discounts crew back in. That's easy. If you want change, the only thing I could suggest at this point is you vote for high-profile people who look like they might do something different. So there is a current Labour MP in there. I imagine he's going to go straight in because usually that works. But just being well-known just seems to work. And who was that? Was it Jamie Strange?
Yes.
And what did you know about him, John?
I know that he's currently the Labour MP for Hamilton East, and I've not worked out why he's not carrying on with that.
Yeah.
But also his wife's chair of the Regional Transport Committee. So,
yeah. And there are some people in here who have, I've noticed, who have experience in the community sector. So that's the sector that I'm in, that we're in, and we see how the money is spent. Also, Neil Tolan, Raglan resident, is going to run. Or is running, and we're going to interview him on Thursday, so stay tuned for that.
You might have a clearer idea, because maybe he knows who his fellow candidates are.
Well, I'm not so sure, unless they've met and quizzed each other. And there was one other interesting thing too. I can't remember who it was, but someone was talking about Well Energy Trust having a lazy balance sheet, and I've heard this phrase before to describe Well Energy Trust, and what the story is there is that they sold... What did they sell? The fibre company. And they've just got the money sitting there. So most commercial businesses will borrow money and then work hard to pay it back. And that introduces some discipline on internal spending. Well Energy Trust does not have that discipline. And I actually have some experience with Well Energy Trust in the past. I used to work for these architecture firms, and we had a project one day doing just the offices for Well Energy Trust. And this is 20 years ago, mind. But... I've never seen a job in the building industry where money was no object before. Like, it was really, really different to everything else I'd been involved in. I've never worked for a Saudi prince or anything like that, so, you know, I wasn't used to that kind of thing. I was used to people really, like, being really, really tight with the money. But really, money was no object. And it was... But then what happened is there was an election, and that group were thrown out, and a new group were in, and they actually tightened up, and they thought spending a whole lot of money on an unnecessary office upgrade was not a good idea. But okay, yeah,
that's when you changed careers, was it?
Well, yeah, I thought I should be on Well Energy Trust. No, unfair job. I think that's a real problem actually that should be discussed. But I'm scared to discuss things too much because these are the people that give us money.
Yep, because unlike most elections, there's no sort of opportunity to meet the candidates or anything like that. So we just got these 150 words, which, as you say, are so bland that it's pretty impossible to work out who's who.
Yeah, and I think the last crew, they said they wanted to bring back discounts. I don't think the implication was they were going to hack into the grants system, but I don't think they did in the end. So... but there is one of them is...
maybe it was just a way of getting elected.
Who knows? I don't know. I don't know, John. I don't know. I've heard other people comment that a bit of diversity on the trust would be good. And also that they lost one of their trust members who was that sportsman. But also a bit of a...
Or Rob...
Hamill. More than a sportsman. But he was during COVID, he was overseas and couldn't get back for the meetings, so had to resign from the trust, and they didn't get anyone else on in his place. So that's all my background info that I've been able to find out, John.
Yep. As Rob Hamill stood as a Green candidate in Taranaki, King Country, a few years ago.
Right, so that was his angle. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, it does seem to attract ex-politicians or people who are interested in being politicians.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess, yeah.
I don't know what fee goes with it. Presumably they get paid a fair salary to, maybe an unfair salary to do the job.
Yeah. Oh, here's the guy who's just talking about a lazy balance sheet, Thomas Nabbs. I don't know who he is. Hamilton went to St. Paul's Collegiate, so he's kind of a Hamilton guy, basically. That's all I can say. But that's an interesting thing that probably should be discussed and probably won't get discussed.
Yeah, I don't feel we did a great job on it a couple of weeks ago when we talked about this.
No, I don't
much better.
I don't feel we are. That's why I say I'm trying to break it down. The only thing I could suggest is if you've got the option of voting, the people who are going to win are the people who are well known usually.
Yeah, maybe we can appeal. If anybody knows anything about this election, maybe they can get in touch with Aaron.
I don't know.
Do
John,
an interview.
If we don't, I'm not sure who will. Because it's usually us that tries to find... You tried to find some stuff out.
Yeah, well, I searched around quite a bit for quite a number of the people, and it wasn't at all obvious either why they were standing or why they were qualified or what they were going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which democracy is great, but if you don't have information to base your vote on, then it doesn't work all that well.
Yeah, and the other problem I've got is that if I'm critical of anything that the trust members, I'm critical of any of them and they hear about it, that's not really going to be very useful for the grant applications that we do every year with Well Energy Trust.
Corruption in action, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm being honest about it. Isn't that? Do you want honest corruption, John? That's the best we can do.
Better than dishonest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. and it's inevitable that, I mean, you've worked hard enough, you find a way to disagree with anyone, so... that definitely would happen. So, I don't know, maybe you can do it on your show and you can do your show on another station. okay, folks.
Maybe I'll do it next week. Maybe by then I'll have got round to finding some differences. But at the moment, I'm as uneducated as probably all our listeners as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've given them much more education in the last 5 minutes.
No, well, I tried to give a strategy, I think.
Reminded them that there is an election on, and as I say, if anybody feels they know more than we do, then give us a ring here at Raglan Community Radio.
Yeah. And given that we should talk about things that we're clued up on, let's move now. We've got the Raglan Community Board meeting happening tomorrow, Wednesday, at...
1:30.
Thank you, John. Open forum at 1:30.
It's back in Raglan again in the supper room.
Yes, and there will be some people presenting about a report about a bus survey. So if it's consultants do a report. John, you're privately unimpressed. Are you publicly unimpressed? I wouldn't have added you. You have to be publicly unimpressed.
I've been outed now.
Yeah, well, I didn't think you would really mind.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that the council doesn't have the expertise, so they brought in some consultants they hoped would have expertise, and based on the slideshow that they've produced, I'm not greatly impressed, but it could be that there's a much more detailed report behind that, and unfortunately we've not seen that. So
what we've got on the agenda for the meeting is their slideshow that they're going to be showing at the meeting, possibly, if someone brings a slide projector or not, as often happens.
Well, they seem to do pretty well with that. But, the slides inevitably sum up what the findings are. And there's a few costings in there, which I've not understood. And there's a few public opinion surveys, which, again, I've not understood. Because the public opinion survey says that 12% of people would use the Raglan bus most days of the week, which is way higher than any other public transport in this country, which I think Wellington gets to 11%, but Auckland 7%, ours is about 2%. So 12% is a high figure.
So is that 12% of the people who responded to the survey, maybe?
We don't know. That's the problem.
But you'd assume it was, wouldn't you, based on that statistic, that it's heavily weighted? Because the people.
It could have been a telephone survey or a survey on the street or something.
But was it
which actually gets a balanced view of what people think?
But so the community board. Know. The community board did a survey.
Yeah, the community board got. I'm not sure that we ever learned how many responses they got. I think it was probably around 300.
Really.
A decade ago, we got more than 350.
But this is in the last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they've never published that. So I don't know whether it didn't come up with results that they didn't like or whether they just don't like publishing things. The opinion, which are set out on several pages of this report, I'm not too sure how valid they are. Because the consultants seem to have ignored them and said, oh, well, we'll base our recommendations on what happens in Taupo and in Thames, where they've got local buses there, and hardly anyone uses those local buses, so we'll assume nobody in Raglan will use them. Raglan's even smaller, so it's not going to be viable. So we'll recommend that they just add a bit onto the weekend buses and not do anything about a local bus, essentially, is what that report says.
Oh, okay, so that's all right. So you've summed it up for us. That's helpful because up till now we haven't even had that. So I don't know. They say a thing like because the distances are short that you travel in Raglan. Don't hear a dinging noise. Is that your phone?
Yes.
Okay. All right. They came through the microphones into my ears, which was very strange because I've got headphones on, folks. Back to the topic.
Somebody trying to give me a part-time job.
Do you need a job, John? I think you're pretty busy already.
Oh, somebody I don't know.
All right. Now someone wants to give me a job.
Same person, is it?
No, that was just a thank you for the interview from Kane before. So, because Raglan, all the distances are short in Raglan, there's not a huge benefit to taking it on the bus when there's other ways of doing it. I didn't understand that argument, actually. Short or long?
Well, there's quite a lot in this report that I don't understand, so I'm hoping that tomorrow at the community board all these things are going to come out. But it is, even in a slide form, it's a long report, and I can't imagine the community board wanting to spend all that much time going into the detail of it. So quite how they're going to deal with it, or whether it's just going to be another waste of money on a consultant, I'm not too sure.
Well, they've all had the chance to read it because they'll have a copy of the agenda. So
yeah, but
maybe
I've read it twice and I still can't make much out of it. And most of the community board don't know as much about buses as I do. So.
Well, Dennis was interested to hear what you thought. So, Dennis,
that's because Dennis doesn't know all that much about buses either.
So. No, well, he's fairly upfront.
Which he has in common with most people in the town because, as I say, only 1% of people use them, or 2% rather.
But the thing about this bus was that it might be useful for tourists getting about in town during summer.
Yeah, they put down quite a lot of the ideas as to how it could be used, what it would be useful for. Probably parking is the main argument in favour of having a bus. But initially it was being talked of as easing the parking problem down at the Wharf.
Yeah.
And the proposals don't mention the Wharf, so it doesn't go any nearer the Wharf than the current bus does.
The report, the proposal. So there's maps put in there.
Yep.
Okay. So, which I haven't looked at. So they don't, but it doesn't. So you're saying the maps don't actually go to the Wharf?
Well, it's rather odd, the maps, because they talk about having a bus that goes out to Whale Bay, and yet the maps don't show Whale Bay at all. They just show buses going to Rangitahi. So what's in the maps and what's in the report don't seem to line up, but presumably somewhere in some detail, which hopefully will come out tomorrow, there is the explanation of why they're looking at Rangitahi rather than Whale Bay. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of things which are, despite it being lots of slides on this community board agenda, I think it's more than half the agenda, in fact, don't actually give us that much information. And there's no detailed costings in it, so there's no detail of what distance the bus might run on various routes and how much that might cost. Which would be a very useful thing to have worked out. I did try to do some cost estimates when I put in a submission to the last long-term plan, but nobody ever commented on whether they were right or not. They were based on what the Ministry of Education pays for its school buses, which seems to me to be a fair guide to how much buses cost. And those details just aren't in here. It says that a bus costs around $50,000 a year, but then it doesn't talk about how much it costs to run. It doesn't talk about the variation in costs and whether it's cheaper to buy a bus and hire it or whether it's cheaper to actually do it some other way. So there's all sorts of details in there that I would have hoped consultants might have had the knowledge to answer, and maybe in their detailed report they have.
So, John, I'm actually looking at, is that the only proposed route?
No, there's about three of them that are very similar.
Oh, okay. So they don't, because the one I'm looking at goes to...
They're all variations on the one you're looking at, so they've got a slight difference in the length or the kinks in them. But
so, and they don't go past Rangitahi. They turn off and go to Rangitahi, don't go out to the bays.
Yep. And yet they talk about serving Naranui and Manu Bay, but the... none of the maps go that far. Maybe they couldn't fit them into their maps, or maybe they didn't have a map for that area. I don't know. It's based on open maps.
Yeah, so I think you're being facetious, John. They should. Yes. Okay. So that's not not very impressive. I've got to say, I'm trying to be kind here, but that's not very impressive if they haven't even shown a possibility of going out there on one of their maps. But John, this on-demand or dial-a-ride option. What do you make of this thought?
They said that was a better option in terms of not having as much regulation, but it was a rather murky area at the moment because the government hasn't passed any legislation. But there are towns like Timaru which are running a dial-a-ride service and have been for 2 or 3 years now, and they found it got better response than the original buses that they were running. One of the problems over the last 2 or 3 years, of course, is that it's all mixed up with COVID.
So the stats are rubbish, basically. Yeah.
Because there have been a few of these new trial systems brought in, and it's hard to know just how successful they are in ordinary times, and hopefully we're returning to normal times, but who knows?
Are they open to new ideas? They're open to changing their lives at the moment. I don't know.
We've got the problem of climate change, and buses are one way of solving climate change. They also mention a cycle route out to Whale Bay, but again, apart from mentioning it, there's no detail in any of these slides. So whether they've looked at the feasibility of where it might go and where it might start and end and what obstacles there are in the way and things like that, I don't know.
A lot of obstacles. That would be expensive. I think it's necessary. Like when my kids were in their early teens, like they were like, oh, we want to go and see our friends at Whale Bay, bike out. And I was like, no. Just no. There's literally, especially for young ones, You know, there's just nowhere to go in some places on that road when you're riding a bike.
The only place to go is the middle of the road so that nobody can overtake you, which is what I do.
Right, there's John's tip for people cycling out to Manu Bay. Just hog the road.
People won't actually run you down, but if they think they can get past, they might knock you over as they go past.
Yeah, okay, there we go. That's the wisdom of years of surviving on bikes from John there. Thank you, John. Okay, so we're not that impressed with the report, but there's a chance to ask questions on Wednesday at the community board meeting. Shall we move on?
Well, there's a few other things on the community board agenda, and as I say, we could spend the whole show talking about that report because it's a lengthy report. But the problem is that there are these unanswered questions, which I'm hoping are going to be answered tomorrow, so
yeah.
I might be able to talk more sensibly about it in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay. So we just go through the list then. Civil defence. Well, we know they're working on it, and they are continuing to work on it. Two board members and Lisa, the councillor. So maybe we go to the Tuku Recycling Centre. You were at the meeting where local residents in Tuku complained that there's rubbish blowing around and there's a real problem with that site that people who aren't supposed to be using it are using it, including day visitors to Raglan who've discovered that they can drop off their rubbish for free.
But they also seem to drop off their rubbish for free all around the area, so you occasionally see black bags that have been dropped off.
Yes.
Presumably nobody can trace where they come from and they just end up going to the recycling.
I don't know.
Not being paid for.
Searching through people's rubbish is a pretty good way of getting information according to some of the movies I've watched, so... Maybe.
Yeah, it can work, but it's an expensive process and even more expensive to take them to court. So I've not heard of any cases where that's happened, but
okay.
It could be that I've not heard of them.
So the background to this, most communities don't have these little recycling drop-off points, recycling rubbish drop-off points, but it's something that Extreme started in 2000 when they first started. But back then, 60-litre bags, the blue bags, were a dollar. And now they're over $4, I think, and there's a continuing increase in terms of the waste levy that the government's putting on it. So there's more and more motivation for people to just avoid the proper system. And I don't know how that's going to be resolved, except as you've noted in here, by stopping it.
Well, the way to resolve it is to have a producer responsibility tax, and when you buy something, then you pay for the cost of recycling it rather than paying for it at the end.
Well, this is a national level solution, or maybe worldwide.
Yes.
Right. So, okay. So,
which was put in legislation by Nandor Tanchos way back in 2008, but it's not been actually implemented by the government ever since.
Yeah. Oh, so it's actually. Oh, so it is there.
It's there on the statute book if the government wants to do something with it. But so far, they've not.
Can a council do something themselves because it's a national law?
No, because it's effectively a charge that the government collects in the way of tax, the same as it does with tax on anything that we buy.
Okay.
That's 17.5%.
Right. So that's that's where you charge the manufacturers.
Yeah. Well, you charge someone down the production line, yes.
Right, and
the same as you do for other purchase taxes. Yeah,
and then it's free to dump, or not dump, it's free to dispose at the end of life.
Yes.
Whatever the thing is, like TV's a real obvious one.
Yep.
And that's they do this in Europe, do they, John?
Quite a lot of countries, yes.
Yeah.
Because the advantage is that it also makes you think, do I really need this product, which is... And the main way of avoiding waste is not to have the product in the first place.
Yeah.
So if you don't need it, don't get it.
Is it also encouraging manufacturers to make like electronic equipment, for instance, in such a way that it can be, the bits can be reused at the end of their life?
Well, increasingly manufacturers are moving towards that, but they have needed those incentives from various countries that have introduced that legislation.
Yeah. So anyway, the one option, which has not been discussed in any serious way at this point, is just kind of a floated idea, is that you do can the Tuku drop-off point and go to street collection. I think you had an email from someone, John, saying, we don't want street collection, that's going to cost us money.
Yep, and we only throw out one bag every 6 months, was it, I think? Which I said was a bit wasteful. I only throw one out every year or two.
Oh, you're one-upping them the amount of rubbish. Okay, so what's a guy to do?
It puzzled me that they said that the cameras had been vandalised, because we've got that one on the airfield that stuck up on that post that's been there, as far as I know, without any vandalism, despite the objections to the airfield, and yet one in Tiuku, which is most people would probably support having a waste recycling place there, has been vandalised, and I don't understand why one camera survives and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, well, I guess we can't really
answer that.
So maybe
that's something to discuss before they look at changing the way they do things.
Destroyed within a week. Yeah. Cameras have been installed in the past, however, were destroyed within a week. Was it one camera or many cameras? I don't know. What says plural there, doesn't it? We're not getting very far with this, but the Tiuku community maybe need to decide what way they want to go, because everything costs money. Everything costs. And you either pay for a street pickup, which is an inefficient thing in rural roads, or you have this drop-off centre, or everyone takes all their stuff through to extreme waste.
Yep, but when you say Tiuku community decides, the only sort of formal decision-making they've got is through the Raglan Community Board, which they're now in that area.
Yeah, there was actually one thing that came out of the meeting last time, was that the Town Hall Committee, they used to be able to, well, the question was asked of the Town Hall Committee if they could cite the drop-off point on their grounds, and they said no. There we go. I think we've probably talked about this enough, because we're getting into minute detail again. But sticking with extreme zero waste, what is this, John? Extreme met to discuss how to educate the public to cut 40% of organic waste in blue bags.
Yeah, because I think we talked about the survey that the council did back in November, and that showed that something like 40% of the stuff in the blue bags could go into the organic waste recycling.
This Raglan's blue bags or the district?
Raglan's, yeah. The district doesn't have blue bags. The district still has black bags that you put stickers on.
Okay, but the bags that go to the dump, they presumably have more because they don't have an organic waste collection. Curbside pickup.
Well, this was broken down by area, so this 40% is for Raglan rather than the rest of the district.
Yeah.
The rest of the district is even higher, but that's because they don't have the organic waste collection.
So there's still some work to be done, basically.
Yes. So basically the community board's been talking to Extreme Zero Waste as to how they might educate people or how they might make other changes to actually achieve a better recycling rate.
What would they be, John?
I don't know. I'm not an expert in how to make the changes, and I don't know whether anyone else is, because a lot of publicity has gone into saying that we have got the green bins and that we can use them and that it's provided through our rates, so they are free. So I'm not sure why people are buying blue bags to put stuff in that they could put out for free in a green bin.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you could do, the first thing I would do is walk around the streets on pickup day and see how many green bins are out. But then you'd have to do it over several weeks, because people don't always put them out every week.
And lots of people just put it on their compost heap anyway, or put it in their worm bin.
So it's actually quite hard to tell who's putting it in, unless you open the bag and find a bill in it, which should have gone in the paper recycling anyway. Yeah, all right. No solutions there. Let's move on. Do we talk about the surf-to-surf walkway? This is kind of, we put a lot of news out about this in the last couple of weeks, about the memorial seats with names of everyone who contributed to the path, the old path, which is only the 90s, John. It's only 30 years old, that footpath, and they're having to replace it.
Well, they're not having to replace it, because one of the plans at one stage was that they were just going to put the new cycleway alongside it, which seems to me to be a better way of doing it, because it keeps that list of names in place. And
so where is the list of names?
Well, if you walk along from Raglan West out to the Marae, if you look on the right-hand side as you walk out, you'll see almost every metre there's a different name along that track.
And written into the concrete?
Yes.
Okay. Tell I've never walked out there. I live on the other side of Raglan.
You've never cycled down there either? Yeah.
Well, no, but I go very fast.
Okay, maybe you cycle down the road rather than the footpath.
No, I'm not saying.
Yeah, because there is room there to actually, along most of it, there's room to have both a 2 metre wide cycleway and the existing footpath, which seems to me to be a better option than just having the two together where cyclists get in the way of pedestrians and vice versa. So having separate lines would seem to me to be a better option than digging up the current one and putting in a new one.
It does sound like it. I suspect that any machinery used would break up the footpath, or there'd be damage to the footpath from the work, which you see happening when this water main work has been done in a few spots. All right, so that's a thing.
It depends how carefully the work's done, as it is possible to work without damaging other things. But if there's no plan and if there's no incentive to do it in a more careful way, then, yeah, that happens.
Okay, are we going to skip? There was a question at a meeting about car speeding on the main road. Apparently the police, their job is to look at areas where speed is over 80 k's. So in our 40k zone, that's not it. Because someone complained that there was car speeding by the BP. So the local police would have to do that if they were going to do it, add it to their already long list of jobs.
As long as you don't exceed 80, you're okay.
They're not interested. Yeah, apparently. Well, I guess they're focused on... Well, they are focused on speed, like speed kills, they say, and that's all their big focus at the moment. Rubbish on State Highway 23. This was a complaint from the Te Uku meeting again. That's a Waka Kotahi job, and they've been contacted, awaiting a response. Very slow government body, that one. We'll see how long that takes. Emergency work on Swan Access Road. John, $112,000 for a washout. Yeah. Do you know, Matt, about this?
Well, and that report, I thought it was just worth noting how much it costs to do these things.
I know what that was down at the park by the beach.
Yeah, where you go down the steep road off Whanga Road and go down to the north end of Ruapuki Beach. All that area got washed out.
And there were photos on Facebook at the time, and it was a good proper washout, to use technical language.
I just put that down because it was a figure that was there. And we don't always get figures about these things, so I think when we do get figures, it's interesting to note what they are and gives an idea of how expensive these sort of jobs are.
Yeah, that is expensive. I'm sure there's people out there who could say, I could have done that with my digger, but it's not kind of how it works anymore, I guess. Next thing, John?
It does need a good culvert in there, otherwise it's going to get washed out again, because that was the problem, that the stream flooded and just washed the whole thing out.
Yeah, well, that will happen again. If we know anything at the moment, rain is coming to get you. should we talk about... We don't need to talk about the car club rally, do we?
I've not yet found out what the decision was, because I can't actually make sense of this report. It was successfully supported by council.
I'm not sure whether that
refers to the seven people who objected as against the three people who supported, or whether it was the rally that was supported. So maybe we'll find out tomorrow afternoon.
I imagine it will go ahead, but that's, as I said, I used the keyword there as imagine. Road safety hui at Raglan Area School. So we've got massive parking problems, a street with not much parking on it, and a school down a dead end that's too big for its area, and the Ministry of Education hasn't thought ahead to get some new land for a school out of town, you know, on the edge of town. So, and kids might get run over on the main road. John, is that a concern?
Well, I think the whole thing's a concern. And again, that gets mentioned in the bus report as well as being a reason to have the bus. Because at the moment there are school buses that bring about 100 kids to school from outlying districts. But if you live nearer than 3 kilometres to a school, then you don't get a free school bus.
Probably.
So those parents tend to drive their kids in, but you could also organise walking or cycling buses.
Also, people are too far away. I remember having the discussion.
Well, 3 kilometres is the distance, so, yep.
Like if there's not many kids to pick up, they won't go. So you want to hope that there's a big family down the end of your road if you live somewhere rural, so that the bus will always go. So probably the most dangerous thing is the kids go over to the BP to get some lollies after school, and there's no natural crossing point there, and it's a bit of a busy intersection. Maybe they're talking about that. I don't know. I know there's been talk of trying to encourage people to walk to school because the parking there is so hopeless, but then that raises those other safety issues, so I don't know what that's going to play out.
Well, that's the whole point of having walking buses, that you have parents or other helpers, one leading, one as a rear guard at the back, and you gradually pick up a whole load of kids as you walk from the edge of town in towards the school.
For people who don't know, a walking bus does not involve a bus. The bus is a metaphor.
Yes.
They just walk on the footpath, like the way John
describes. As an organised group, as if they were on a bus, but they're actually walking. Yeah.
Okay. John, what else do you want to talk about this morning? We're talking to John Lawson. We've got a community board meeting tomorrow, and we're just looking at things that might be discussed in the meeting.
Well, for those who are interested in how often things get cleaned, inspected, all the other things that council does, there's a schedule on the community board agenda. So go to the council's website, have a look at their council section meetings, Raglan Community Board, and click on that. It's a quite complex process to get there, but if you find it, you'll find in the middle of the report there's a schedule of about 3 or 4 pages that sets out all these times that they're supposed to do things, like they inspect lights once a year.
It sounds excruciatingly boring, John, but what happens is people turn up to the community board meeting and they say the light hasn't been, light's not working properly down my street, or the pothole's here, or this or that. So, and this is, I guess this is the community board trying to do its job and keep an eye on the staff, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you feel that these times are either not being kept to or the times aren't realistic, then you might like to get in touch initially with the community board or with your councillor and say, how about getting these things changed?
Okay. John, this is a long list. Are we going to get through this? Do you want to pick the things that
I've got another 10 minutes to go. So.
Okay, all right, one per minute. where are we? Connectivity strategy. We've talked about this before. It's completed. Consultation is completed.
It remains to be seen whether they come up with anything better than the 2016 strategy that they seem to me to be quite a good one, but then they never implemented it, so...
It's not for implementing, is it, really? There's no money to implement everything on there.
It's a planning document that says if you're going to build something, you need to take account that in the long term we've got this plan to put a walkway through here.
Yeah, that kind of seems to be the long and short of it. The long-term plan building blocks workshop held, that was for councillors, was it? 2024 long-term plan.
Again, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago as well. But there's no detail of it in the community board agenda, but there is in the agenda of, I think it was the infrastructure committee that talked about it 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I know the community board is aware. I mean, the long-term plan's a key thing. It's where the council spends its money, and they will be submitting about stuff. If you might want to talk to your community board member, or you might want to submit yourself when the time comes, but I think the community board might get an early look. I'm not sure, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always the problem with the long-term plan that by the time public consultation comes round in April next year, everything's been worked out and they really don't want to start changing it and make any substantial alterations to what's been planned for the last year or more.
There is public consultation at the moment, but it's for some very big picture thinking around about what, John?
I think the consultations closed a week or two ago on that. But, I think they set out 4 statements. And I think, again, we discussed a couple of weeks ago that those 4 statements didn't bear much relationship in many cases to what they were actually doing.
Well, give us an example of one.
One of them was that they were talking about community well-being, but they were also talking about selling off old folks' homes.
Rightio. Yep. All right. It's I've said a few times, it's a pity the council sold off some land here in town a few years ago, because that land could have been used for maybe help with the housing crisis. But that there might be more land that we don't know about, but we certainly know some of it's gone. Number 3, Bow Street. John, what's that?
It's just interesting to see that it's still being discussed by community board members. It's the empty, well, now empty garage down at the bottom of Bow Street. It's presumably the council said they were going to demolish and they were going to talk about what might go in its place.
So there's a private landlord who has the lease on a lot of that site, but there's also a Waitangi Tribunal claim over the site as well.
Yep.
Is that right? So,
well, I think on that particular site, it was probably John Hart who had the lease on it. I think he's given it up. So who I think it's now reverted back to council to decide what they do with it. But as you say, there is a Waitangi Tribunal claim as well.
Okay. Does that include the house behind it?
I think it does, yeah, because that is numbered 3 Bow Street, the same as the garage. So.
Okay. All right, so we don't know what's going to happen there, and I think nobody does at this point. They're probably waiting for the tribunal.
I was just noting that discussions were going on, and
it would
be quite good to actually know what those discussions are and maybe involve the community in what's going to happen in what's part of the centre of town, really.
Isn't the tribunal spoken? They've spoken on our area. I've got a report somewhere.
Well, they've done a series of reports because back in 1870, the government, it was just after Wynyera had died, the guy who's got the monument the other side of the footbridge, and he died and his son was claiming that it was their land, and the government decided it was their land and they were going to give it to the harbour board, and the harbour board then became part of the council. So that's how the council ended up with that area.
And I'm sure it was a just and honourable process.
Well, they said how much they owed to Wynyera. That's why they erected a monument to him, yes.
But then took... Yeah, okay.
I was then being they pinched his land.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic in case anyone was wondering. All right, so that's... yeah, I think that's going to sit in limbo for a while. Wynyera walkway, a while ago they were saying... So this is... they're going to widen the walkway between the jetty and the walk bridge and passed round to the boat ramp there.
Essentially, this is setting out the case for money being in the long-term plan to pay for this.
Because there wasn't enough money was the conclusion last...
It wasn't in the previous long-term plan, it doesn't come within their ordinary repairs budget.
So there was no money, not enough, no money. Okay.
And they're saying, there's a water main there, so that's going to need some work on it, and... setting out various other things that are reasons for putting some money into this scheme.
Oh, so what is that? Does that water main just serve the campground, or does it go a long way?
It doesn't say in the report. I'm guessing that it serves the campground, but...
Yeah, okay. So that's something that the council might decide they want to invest some money in during this long-term plan round.
So we were just talking about the long-term plan, and my guess is that's one of the things that could well end up in it, but depends what interest there is. And as I say, it's going to be difficult when we get to next April and it's not in there. It would take a fairly concerted campaign to get it in there, and it does seem to me that it's one of the major routes in town, and that it's way too narrow at the moment, because it was quite adequate when it was built in 1915. But
and what was the population of Raglan then?
About 300.
About 300, yeah. So
it's now over 3,000 and going to 12,000. So yeah, something that was adequate in 1915 isn't adequate now, especially since it's falling down.
Yeah, well, they can prop it up for quite a while longer, but they have created that... what are they calling it? The town to surf walkway. So it's going to deliver a lot more people across the bridge.
Yeah,
into that.
It's probably supposed to be part of that cycleway as well. And
they're recommending people don't actually
shared
cycle.
Walkways, cycleways are supposed to be at least 3 meters wide.
Yeah, but there definitely isn't 3 meters there. Okay, so that's we'll see what happens there. Greenslade Road safety only working on maps. No mention of plans to make State Highway 23 junction safe. John, that junction is eventually. Part of State Highway 23, it's going to be given back to the council given to the council from Waka Kotahi. Waka Kotahi doesn't have it in their long-term plan to do the $2 million worth of work that the council wants done before they give back that bit of road. Waka Kotahi is doing consultation about safety on State Highway 23 that is going very slowly. That's my summary. So,
well, you've missed out that in the Lorenzen Bay plan, which was adopted, 15 years ago, and there's still a plan for it, which is active whenever that housing development takes place, that they're going to change that junction at the corner of Greenslade Road and Main Road to be the corner of Lorenzen Bay and Hills Road and Main Road.
A safer place. But also when the council gets hold of that bit of the road, they'll change the speed to 60k and then the intersection might not be such a problem.
Yeah, so it's a matter of your guess is as good as mine as to whether that change of location of the junction is going to take place before the change of speed limit.
I guess we're taking bets now on which solution will be the slowest.
Yeah.
That really is, that's the situation.
Meanwhile, it remains a dangerous junction.
Yeah. One thing that the council needs to do is submit to Waka Kotahi for their long-term plan, which is, I think they're also on this similar cycle, to submit to their next long-term plan to spend money on doing the work, which was supposedly $2 million a few years ago, so probably more now. So is the work between Greenslade Road and Simon Te Whero's,
yeah, that's it.
Site, gallery, the road sinking a little bit or something?
Well, they did some work on it 2 or 3 years ago, and it puzzles me that the work they did then wasn't sufficient.
It's one of those sites that's forever a problem. So council probably doesn't want it at all, but they're going to have to take it. It's yeah. So that's, anyway, our council has to make sure they submit to the Waka Kotahi long-term plan to get them to do that, so that then eventually they can take the bit of the road back into the council, and then we can at least slow down on that intersection. All right, let's move away from that one. I'm sick of that one. John, well, we've got a minute. What are the key things here that you want to bring to us?
Manu Bay is an ongoing thing.
Yes.
Water supply reticulation. We've still seen the pipes up the top of Bow Street. Those are supposed to be going in. They're supposed to be closing off Long Street for a while to do that. The wharf talking about an official opening somewhere around Christmas. So there's going to be an opening, I think, of the eastern section. Is it the end of this week?
It's soon, yeah.
And the other thing is also that they're looking at the blueprints. You might remember we had meetings about blueprints about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And those guide the council's planning process. And they're talking about updating them. And it's not too clear whether that's just going to be a minor change to update them or whether there's going to be more than that. And if anyone in the community is going to be involved in that. So.
Well, that's the thing. Now that they've done the blueprints, which were done fairly reasonably, I thought it was a good thing.
Yep, that was one of the good things that Axel Beck did, who was standing for mayor but didn't succeed.
Yeah, so, but then are they going to keep up with them? That's the next thing.
Because without Axel driving it, I don't know who else in the council is taking responsibility for them.
Well, 9 new councillors, so it could be anybody, it could be nobody.
Yeah, the problem with council is often that these things get forgotten if somebody who was driving it is no longer doing so.
Yeah, well, a staff can champion it as well. So Jim Ebono, planning and policy manager, maybe he's taking care of it.
And the other thing that we haven't mentioned is that the playground somewhere around Greenslade Road is again, they've produced a report looking at the flooding and the environmental issues. And they say that once they've looked at that, they'll decide where that playground's going to go.
So
again, that's part of that housing development I was mentioning with the change of location of Greenslade Road.
So that is that walkway that's got that little bridge.
Yes.
And it goes through to Lorenzo Bay Road. Okay.
Yep. It's somewhere near there, but location yet to be decided on the basis of this environmental and flooding report.
Okay. All right. Oh, the details, John, the details. And you're going to give more details tonight at 6, yes, on your show?
Yep. Probably be going in rather more detail through that huge bus report, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, folks, if you want to really hear it
as
torn apart.
As far as I can make out what there is in it, yes.
Yeah, if you want to hear it torn apart, that's 6 o'clock here on 98.1 FM Raglan Community Radio. John, thanks for coming in.
Or if you want to hear more about all these things, come along to the community board meeting tomorrow afternoon, 1:30, supper room, temple.
Yes, yes. Don't forget that. And any issue you want to bring up, you can bring up at that meeting. This bus thing will start, I think that'll start after the open forum. Probably the first thing will be the presentation.
Well, I think fluoride's also going to be mentioned. So,
is that on the agenda?
It's not on the agenda. There was a request for it to be on the agenda, but I think the community board decided it was an issue they couldn't do anything about because there was an instruction from Ashley Bloomfield about a year ago telling them to prepare for putting fluoride in the water. But, of course, he's gone now, and whether anybody else is going to follow up on it, who knows?
I did, before you, I interviewed Kane Titchener, who's the guy who's coming out to do the talk, and he wants to talk to the community board. And the approach he and his crew are taking is actually to get councils to pressure the government. So, in short, okay. He'll explain that in more detail. Don't forget Wednesday night, 6:30 at the Congregational Church Hall on Stuart Street, if you want more detail on that.
And he's probably going to be there at the start of a community board meeting as well.
Yeah, he said he was. Yeah. All right, John, thanks for coming in.